The Vintage Gamer, Episode 7, Can't Stop.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth, here for another week of vintage gaming. And it has been a rather interesting week. Actually, went curling on Saturday, which is not the easiest thing to do in North Carolina, and discovered that, yeah, it definitely qualifies as an Olympic sport. Well, it's not tough, but it's definitely not easy. Certainly not as easy as it looks. And it definitely did a bigger number on me than I thought it would. I've been sore for the past few days. Guess I've been using muscles that hadn't used in the past, or certainly haven't been used lately. Normally this would be the time to do some hellos to people who have mentioned the podcast, but I think I'm going to save that for the end because I have quite a few, and I actually want to refer people to some podcasts that I think are worthwhile. So I'm just going to leap into the game. So the game is Can't Stop. It is a light dice rolling game for 2 to 4 players, which takes about half an hour to play. It was designed by Sid Saxon and first released by Parker Brothers, yes, again, Parker Brothers, in 1980. And in that case, it had a big bright red plastic stop sign shaped board with pieces that you place on tracks on top of that. But then that version went out of print, and it has been since rethemed as a mountain climbing game and printed in Europe. But it will be re-released with the stop sign board in late 2006 or 2007 from Face to Face. And until then, I will later on describe a way of playing it without actually going out and buying the board. I think I'll probably end up buying the Face to Face board at some point. This is one of those games. Remember in the first episode I talked about the Games 100, and this is one of those games that I encountered and wondered, what is that? That looks like a very interesting game. It did appear in the Games 100 for a few years, and then disappeared, as I said, it went out of print. And I never tracked it down. Finally, this week, for this podcast, again, getting to the reason for the podcast, I downloaded a computer version, and I liked it. So I brought it out at our weekly gaming event and put together a homebrewed version using cards and ice house pieces. And we played a couple of 5-player games, and it was kind of fun. Don't know what's going on down there. The rules are pretty simple. The board consists of 11 tracks arranged in columns. Each column corresponds to a roll of 2 dice, so they're labeled 2, 3, 4, up 12. Basically the sums of 2 dice. The number of spaces in each column varies depending on the probability distribution of each roll. So the 2 column has 3 spaces, the 3 column has 5 spaces, etc., up to the 7 column, which has 13 spaces. And then you go back down again until you get to 3 spaces for the 12 column again. And the goal of the game is to roll dice and move markers up the column corresponding to the total of the dice until you have moved up to the top of a column, and at that point you can claim it. If you claim 3 columns, then you win the game. Now, if this game were just to roll 2 dice and move a marker and then pass the dice along, that would be pretty boring. But that's not the game. There are 3 modifications which avoid this obvious trap. The first is that instead of rolling 2 dice, you roll 4 dice. And what you do with the 4 dice is split them into 2 pairs, each of 2 dice. Each pair represents which column you can progress in. So, for example, if you were to roll a 1, 2, 3, and 5, you can move in the 4 and 7 columns, or the 3 and 8 columns, or the 5 and 6 columns. Now, if you can, more on that in a minute, you must use both pairs of dice and progress in both columns. So, in the example, you couldn't move in just the 4 column. One exception is if you have a role where you can progress twice in one column. So for example, you roll 3-4 and 2-5, and that would allow you to progress in the 7 column twice. Another example of where you don't have to move in both columns is if one of the columns is already claimed. In that case, it's blocked and you can't use that number. The second modification to that basic idea of the game, is that you can only advance in up to 3 columns per turn. And there are 3 special markers that you use to indicate which columns you're moving in for that turn. As I indicated, you can't reserve markers. That is, if you've chosen 2 different totals and there are 2 markers available, you must move in both columns. And once you run out of markers, then you can pick one of the pairs to use, in other words, of those 4 dice, as long as that pair corresponds to one of the columns that you're already moving in. Which brings me to the third modification in the game. If you ever make a roll where you can't move any of your markers, then you blow it, and your turn ends. And you lose all progress that you've made to that point. To avoid this, you can choose to stop after you move the markers. At this point, the temporary markers are replaced with some permanent ones in your color. On subsequent turns, instead of starting at the bottom of the column, you can start right after your permanent marker. It basically keeps track of your progress in that particular column. Now, note that you're not locked into using the columns that you've marked on that turn for the remainder of the game. You can proceed in any column at the beginning of your turn. You just get locked in during each turn depending on where you place those 3 temporary markers for that turn. So let me just summarize everything that I've just said. So on your turn, you start by rolling 4 dice. You then pick 2 pairs out of those dice and move the temporary markers associated with those pairs. If you're starting in a column where you've already saved some progress, you can start the marker after that. Otherwise, you start at the bottom. Now, if you roll the dice and you can't move any markers, can't place any new ones, and you can't move the ones that you already have, then you blow it. You remove all the temporary markers and give the dice to the next player. After moving the markers, assuming you haven't blown it, you can choose to stop, in which case you replace the temporary markers with permanent ones in your color, and again give the dice to the next player. Otherwise, you go back to step 1, roll dice. So basically, on your turn, you can just keep rolling dice and trying to move up the columns and progress to the top so you can claim one. So, quick example. On your first turn, you roll a 1, 2, 3, and 5, like I said before. You choose to advance in the 4 and 7 columns, and you roll again. So you pick 2 temporary markers, place them in the bottom of the 4 and 7 columns. You roll 1, 1, 1, and 2. Hey, it's not likely, but it can happen. So you choose to move in the 3 column. You take your last temporary marker, place it on the 3 at the bottom of the 3, and you roll again. And in that case, you roll a 1, a 6, and a 6, and a 6. And the only column that you can actually move in that case is the 7 column. So you just move that temporary marker 1 and the 7. And you decide to keep going. In that case, you just roll all 6s and you blow it. So you remove everything and you give it to the next player. And then the dice go around and all the other players do their thing. And it's your next turn. So in the next turn, you roll 2 3s and 2 4s, say. And rather than trying to treat it as a 6 and an 8, you decide to treat it as 2 7s. So you choose to advance 2 in the 7 column, and you roll again. And we'll just skip the rest. You decide to keep going, and you manage to progress 8 spaces in column 7. At this point, you've decided you've pushed your luck long enough. You decide to stop, you remove the temporary markers, and you mark column 7 in your color, in space 8. And on your next turn, you can proceed where you left off in the 7 column, assuming you roll a 7, or you can try somewhere else, all depending on the die rolls. So, if I've given you the proper sense of it, you should see that the game can get pretty tense as you build up progress in a column. Will the next roll bust me? Am I just pushing the odds too far here? Or should I just keep going in case someone else passes me and takes over the column? It is tough figuring out the balance of when you should stop and when you should continue, and so I actually sat down and did a little probabilistic analysis, which I will share with you. So, as a starting point, the board makes you think it'll be easier to progress in the outer numbers, the 2s and 12s, rather than the middle ones, like 7, since the number of spaces is much fewer. But even on a roll of 2 dice, there is a slight probabilistic advantage given to 7. You have a slightly greater chance of hitting that last space in the 7th column than the last space in the 2 column. So just trust me there. And going beyond that, we're not rolling just 2 dice, we're rolling 4 dice. And we're picking 2 and 2 out of that. And on a roll of 4 dice and picking 2, there's a 13% chance of hitting 2 or 12, but a 64% chance of hitting 7. And better than 50-50 is pretty good odds. Taking that just a little bit further, on average it'll take about 23 rolls to fill the 2 or the 12, but just 20 rolls to fill the 7. So there's a bigger advantage there. But we can keep going. I mean, that's not the game. The game isn't just to roll one thing. We're rolling 4 dice and trying to hit 3 numbers. Suppose those 3 numbers are 6, 7, or 8. So I've got 4 dice, I'm going to pair them off, and I'm going to try to get a 6, 7, or 8 on one of those pairs. I was astounded when I looked that up. The probability of hitting one of those is 92%, and that's much higher than I expected. Now, if a 7 is involved in the triple at all, the probability never drops below 75%, which is amazing odds. But, again, we don't care about just a single roll. I mean, we care about a series of favorable rolls, or what we're trying to do is get a streak. And with the probabilities that high, you know, 92%, 75%, your odds of being able to roll for a while without busting are quite high. So, for example, again going back to the 6, 7, or 8, if you manage to get them as your 3 columns, then your odds of hitting 8 in a row of those 3 numbers are just about 50%. So, stop after 8 rolls, right? You got 6, 7, or 8, you roll 8 times, you say, well, I've gone about as far as I can without the probabilities dropping below 50%. I'll stop here. It's a reasonable strategy, but I actually looked into seeing how hard it is to create streaks throughout the game. So, suppose you want a streak of 13, which is what you need to fill the 7 column. Now, I'm playing games with probability here and ignoring the fact that you won't be rolling 7s all the time. This is just an estimate to get a sense of how much things are going to streak in the game. The odds of that happening, that streak of 13, in the first 20 rolls, is about 50% again. That's 20 rolls. But in the course of a game, which is at least 100 rolls, those odds go up to nearly 100%. So there's almost guaranteed to be a streak of 13 successes with that 6, 7, and 8 sometime in the game. And looking at that, I realized that this game is designed to create streaks, and to create streaks of a length long enough to take over a column. And that's where a big part of the tension of the game comes from. You don't know if you're riding that streak, or you're just heading for another bust. If you let the dice go at that, you know, at 8 there, maybe somebody else will get that one streak and ride it to the top. If you're not gutsy enough, you'll miss the streaks, and you're too gutsy, you'll blow it all the time. So the key is finding the right balance depending on the situation. Now, some people say, well, you always got to go with the odds, but sometimes you got to risk it in trying to get that whole thing. Now, these odds that I've been talking about assume that all columns are available. As people take over columns, the odds actually change. So if 6, 7, and 8 are full, suddenly that high probability of success becomes a liability, and people end up busting out all over, much like Spring, or Anna Nicole Smith. Anyway, now, you could memorize all the possible changes in odds, but in that case, the game would probably become uninteresting. But that's a lot of odds, and since they're always changing, I think that adds a really nice variable to the game. So, some general strategy. It's good to try to move only in the 6, 7, and 8 columns, obviously. I mean, with 92% success rate, that's pretty darn good. It's also good to focus on advancing in only one column. At least, this is what I've found. And let the others just act as keeping you in the game. So, for example, if you had a 2, 6, 8 combo, you could try to push the 2 up, knowing that the 6 and 8 are high percentage chances that will keep you alive a little bit longer. rather than trying to push the 6 or the 8 up. It depends on those early rolls. If you get the 2 and then you just don't see a 2 again, then maybe you're going to start thinking, well, I better start pushing that 6 and 8 up. Or another example, if you had the 5, 7, 8, you could focus on the 7, knowing that that will turn up a lot and have a good chance of getting quite high. Kind of depends on what your style is. Another thing, at least I recommend, is taking the middle columns early in the game, because as they get taken, the odds of busting go way up. And particularly if you're playing with a lot of players, if you're the one who's taken the middle columns, or at least one of those middle columns, that means you're probably in the lead and have a better chance of winning overall. Basically, it's better for you to take the middle column than let somebody else do it. And obviously, you want to play the odds as much as possible. So you're going to keep rolling until the odds drop below 50%. But you might want to keep an eye on the other players. If someone's about to win, like in the game that we played on Thursday, one guy, he had one space left in the 10, and I knew, I had a pretty good sense that there was a good chance that that 10 was going to come up sometime in his turn. So I just went for it. I had to try to get the win before he had a chance to roll. So I made a risky move, and it paid off, and I won the game. As far as the odds and deciding when to stop, I have described sort of some rule of thumb there, but if you want a more detailed article about it, Michael Keller wrote an article about it, and it describes what he calls the rule of 28. Basically, you add up numbers depending on what column you've started in or are progressing in, and if they add up to 28 or more, then you stop. And I tried that out. It seems to work okay, but I actually find that I spend more time adding up numbers and not enough time rolling and enjoying the game. I find that my intuitive sense seems to work out fine for me, and I get more enjoyment out of it anyway. But I'm going to put it in the show notes if you want to check it out. Now, Can't Stop is a dice game, and which makes it on the lighter end of things, which would make you think it would make a pretty good party game. Its one disadvantage for that is that it only supports 4 players. Now, the more attentive out there will note that we actually played with 5 players. In our case, that's because we had a Crib Together board. If you have the original Parker Brothers board, you can add pieces by getting a copy of the game Advance to Boardwalk. The markers in there are the same as Can't Stop and will give you colors up to 7. Now, if you are going to play with that many players, you have to realize that beyond 5 players, the winning conditions have to change. If you have 5 players and each player has taken over 2 columns, then there's only 1 available. If you go to more players, say for 6, then all 6 could take over all the columns and no one would win. So with 6 to 8, you can play with 2 columns to win, or an alternative, and I'm not really sure how this one works, but you could allow up to 2 players to share a column before it's closed off. So in that case, you just have to take over 3 distinct columns. Beyond 8, I suspect it's probably too unwieldy. I mean, honestly, with 5, I was already feeling a little unwieldy. I was getting kind of impatient for my turn to roll, so I can't imagine playing with 8 and waiting that long. Other variants out there, for 2 players, you can require 5 columns to win, and for 3 players, require 4. Another variant is that if you land on a space with another player's colored marker on it, then you just skip right over it, so you never have 2 markers marking the same space. A different way of doing that is when you land on a space with another player's color on it, then you must keep rolling until you can move off that space, or you blow it. And this version is also known as Can't Stop, Can't Stop. And a final variant, and these are all official variants as listed in various German games, and there's also a PDF on BoardGameGeek. Another variant sets up betting on the game. I mean, it's a dice game. It'd be nice to be able to bet on it. And in this variant, the other players, the ones that aren't currently rolling, will bet on the result of the current player's turn, whether they will make it or whether they will blow it. If you bet correctly, then you can advance some of your pieces depending on the amount that you've bet. If you fail, then you must retreat. And the amount you retreat depends on whether you were betting that they would fail or they would make it. If you bet that they would make it and they blew it, then you must retreat 2x the number of spaces. If you'd like to try Can't Stop, there's a pretty good computer version out there called Roller Move, and of course I'll have a link in the show notes. Roller Move even supports some of the variants I described. It supports the Can't Stop variant, and it supports the varying number of columns required to win for 2 and 3 players. If you want to play with your gaming group, you can also do as we did and build your board using playing cards. There's a PDF on BoardGameGeek describing how, and again, I'll include a link in the show notes for that. In our case, we used Ice House pieces because we had 5 players. But with 4 players, you can use different colors of poker chips or any other marker where you have at least 11 of each piece. And if you'd like to play online against other players, it's also available on Brett Spielfeld. So, in summary, Can't Stop is a nifty little dice game which provides a good balance of uncertainty and tough decisions. Now, a skilled player, someone who knows the odds and how to capitalize them, will generally beat a weaker one, but the randomness gives a weaker one a possibility of winning, which makes it a lighter game and a little more relaxed in that sense. It's also short, and that makes a nice little warm-up game before you get into the really heavy stuff. So that's it for the game. As I mentioned, I have some hellos to say. First of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to Grognads at Gone Gaming. If you're not reading Gone Gaming and you like board games, I highly recommend you check it out. It is a good blog shared amongst, I think, 5, maybe 6 people. So go check it out. Also want to give a hi to Sam Chup of the Bear's Grove. He does an RPG podcast, which is quite good. And Sam, you need to give me that promo so I can play it. And yeah, I'll get you a promo too, I promise. I also wanted to mention a couple of non-gaming podcasts that I think are worth checking out. The first is Random Signal by my friend and merch friend Jason Adams. He does, well, it's a random podcast, but it does focus on Chapel Hill music and other indie-type music. The other is Wheelbarrow by a guy named Tom Shad, and it focuses on his experiences as a musician, and he plays some of his music and talks about his history there. I like them both. They both have a nice eclectic feel to them. So, if you're interested in something beyond just gaming, I highly recommend you check those out. And finally, I actually have a voice message.
Hi, Jim. This is Mark Johnson from the Board Games To Go podcast. And just last night, I listened to your most recent episode of The Vintage Gamer, the one focusing on diplomacy. And I wanted to give you a little feedback about that. In the beginning, you said something about, you expressed some concern that it was long and the first cut was boring or something like that. And I just wanted to let you know that I really enjoyed this show. I didn't enjoy it because it was long. Your shows don't have to be that long, but the length didn't bother me. It was a great study of a game that I don't know that much about. Believe it or not, I've never played Diplomacy myself. And I especially liked the sort of back end of the show where you talked about some of your own personal experiences, both with Realpolitik and with your own experiences playing the game of Diplomacy itself. So, all in all, a really great show, and I'm looking forward to more of them. Thanks, Jim. Bye.
So, thanks, Mark. Yeah, as far as redoing the podcast, I didn't redo the Diplomacy podcast because I thought it was too long. I actually redid it. I mean, I knew it was going to be long. It's Diplomacy, and I have a long history, and I had a lot to say. I actually redid it because I thought what was there was boring. I listened to it, and in certain topics, I just kind of went on and on and didn't really say much of anything, and I kind of lost some energy through it. So I decided, all right, well, we'll just redo it. But thanks for the comments, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. So with that, I'll about do it for today. I'm going to be busy this weekend, so I'm actually going to go to a 2-week schedule right now. And in 2 weeks, I will be talking about an RPG. I'm thinking probably, well, I'll make it a surprise. So, until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. The Vintage Gamer is a podcast available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. Music for the Vintage Gamer is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres, and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. I am your host, Jim Van Verth. You can reach me via email at vintagejim@gmail.com or via Skype. My username is JV Square. Thanks for listening.